call to order the May 28th, 2019 meeting of the Common Council of the City of Washington. I would ask first for a moment of silence for our veterans and military personnel serving all over the world. Thank you, Mr. President. Would you lead us in the Pledge of Allegiance?
Pledge of Allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Could we have roll call, please, Beth?
Councilman Singleton?
Present.
Brown?
Here.
Saigon?
Here.
Hampton?
Here.
Councilwoman Decker? Absent. Councilman Chambers?
Here.
Councilman Dahl?
Here.
Okay, we have a quorum, so we can proceed. First item on the agenda is approval of the minutes of the May 13th meeting. Are there any corrections, or those are in your packet, any corrections or additions to those?
I move we approve those.
Have a motion by Councilman Dahl. Do I have a second?
Second.
Second by Councilman Brown to approve the minutes as presented. All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried. Minutes are approved. Next item of business are the claims for your review. Any questions on those? If not, I would entertain a motion to refer those to the Board of Public Works.
I'll make that motion.
Motion by Councilman Chambers, second by Councilman Sidebottom. All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried. Okay. I know a lot of you are here for various things on the agenda. If you haven't been here for a while, we have two meetings. First is our Common Council meeting, and then followed by that is our Board of Public Works. Some of the items like street closures and street signs and those kinds of things are on the Board of Public Works, just so you know we're not forgetting you when we close this meeting. So I think everybody here, I know what everybody's here for, so you're on one or the other agendas. Just want you to know that. So first item, I've got under members of the public, comments from the public before we get into our business ourselves. First, Mr. and Mrs. Lifford, I got you first on that. So if you would stand up, state your name, although I think everybody here knows you and your address.
I'm Gail Lifford, and that's Jim Lifford. We have rentals in town, and this week we got a letter, it was last week, that they're not going to pick up trash at our rental homes anymore when people move out. And that's fine. I don't mind that a bit. We can take care of our own trash. But when I have to pay a light bill that includes a $15 fee every month to pick up trash, then I shouldn't have to pay that $15 fee. I have house for sale. It's been for sale for a year. Nobody's put trash out there, but the lights are on because it's for sale. The realtor wants them on. And I'm paying a $15 trash bill. Now I'm going to have to start paying it for every house that is empty until I get it rented and the people take it over. And nobody's going to pick up trash.
And we had about 10 of them, so that's about $150 a month.
It's a month. And I think that, and the mayor said that to get that taken off my bill, I had to come and talk to you guys. That's my problem.
Yeah.
I don't mind them not picking the trash up.
Yeah, we can take care of it.
We come out on Cosby Road Friday, and you ought to see how they scattered it all over the place. We come back, we have two more new trash barrels. We put it in there, and we come back to get and to do some more, and somebody had taken the two new trash barrels and put what they wanted into them and left. And that fell on the lawn and took a bunch of stuff behind.
Is that right next to your fence?
Yeah.
Fence?
Right.
Yeah, I took over to see that.
It's a mess.
Yeah, I see.
It's a truly mess. When that was put there, we should have took a picture.
And we've gone and fixed it. We've gone and fixed it three times.
I took a picture of it Thursday.
Thursday?
No, it was Friday when they set that up.
Yeah.
Then it was Friday morning.
It was Friday when they set that up.
Yeah, I got to fix it right up.
Well, as I explained to Mr. and Mrs. Lifford when they were in, it's, you know, that was the way the ordinance was written. It was basically, you know, every home that has electric gets charged $15, and it's, you know, even out over everybody over the city. And I don't know.
But it's not fair to have to pay something if you're not getting the use of it.
Exactly. I can't bring a bag of trash from my house and put it in there.
On the lights and the water, we have to pay minimum on those bills, which I do because I've got it on. I can use it, but they're not being used very rarely because nobody's living in the house. And I'll pay that, and I'll carry the trash off myself, but I don't want to pay $15 a month for something that nobody's doing.
The problem you get into is the verbiage that you sent out, that I read. I don't know if you sent it to them. It said, we don't pick up business trash, therefore, we're not going to pick up these rentals. If that's considered a business once the tenant is gone, then they should not have to pay that $15.
Well, we pick up any residential property and any rental with three or fewer.
But what I read, maybe you didn't send that out to him, but
yeah,
one of the things you had me read stated that you are considered a business. We do not pick up business trash. So
it might have been
that was our verb. So yeah. Therefore, okay. Reading that, then they should not be charged. Using that.
Right now, I think I've got 10. That's
$100. I'd be happy when they get rented to go in, or even give the light office a list of the ones that are rented and let them know when they're empty so that they know when somebody was there they had to pay the bill. But I don't think that I should have to pay a bill if I'm not getting the use of the service.
Mayor, we talked about this earlier. I'd really like to see an opinion from our city attorney about this whole matter and delay any action at this time until we get that something in writing from Tim. And where are we legally? I mean, I understand where you're coming from. I really do. And Doug's point, I guess, if we don't pick up trash from commercial establishments, nor do we charge them that fee.
Right.
So I want to make sure we're on solid legal footing before.
Well, we got the legal issue. We also have the logistics of the thing, whether we can manually take care of that through the billing and through the trash guys, because they won't know what houses are vacant, which ones aren't vacant. So, well, you can tell the office, but the guys in the trash truck aren't going to know if they're out the back of 211 South Main or 213 South Main or 214 South Main.
Most of those guys that do trash know us because they go through, if they think there's anything out there, they go through it to make sure we haven't put our home trash out there and everything else. They watch us very closely.
Okay.
I've cleaned out a lot of houses, and I've never had one that had more than a ton of stuff. That's to me, to take out to the landfill is $20. The city gets it for $16 or something. But normally, when that person moves out and we get it turned on, they get $30 that month because they got $15 from the guy that just moved out. And when I got turned back on, they get another $15.
Okay.
And then I have to pay a sewage bill, and he moves out to get it turned on, so I'm stuck on another bill there. It's not very profitable anymore.
Well, I agree with Blake on the legal part of it. But as an ex-landlord, I'm agreeing with you. It doesn't seem right. And the issue come up with just today of having two trash billings per month. One from you and one from your the landlord or a tenant. So I don't know. We'll just hear from Tim.
Let us talk to legal counsel, and then we'll also work with the utility office, see how we can handle that billing, because it's automated right now. When the electric bill's on, or the $15 on, or so it would take some manual intervention. So let us take a look.
But you are already getting charged this $15.
I didn't get because they picked
up. Right. I just want to know for myself. You were getting.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we've always been.
Okay. Let us take a look at it, and we'll get back to you on it, okay?
How long?
Well.
Because my bill's going to start. Starting at the 1st of June. I'm not going to have any trash pickup, and I'm going to have at least five bills of $15 a month.
Okay.
I think it's more than that, but I know for sure it's five.
I just put another one today, so that makes it
okay.
But just for the record, I mean, as far as that goes, I understand the rental part, but as far as the house for sale, that would just fall under just a normal house. That if you've got electricity on there, then...
But they don't pick up trash there either.
They do not?
No.
Well, how do they know?
Well, how it's being generated if it's vacant, right?
Yeah. And they won't pick up, they know that we, that, I don't know if they know we own it, they know somebody owns it, that nobody's living there, and they won't pick, you know, like if we put something there from a different house, they would not...
See, that's the logistical problem the mayor's talking about with our people trying to keep records of all that.
It's not just you guys trusting, you've got other people that do bring stuff into the city.
Obviously, if there's no trash, the guys aren't going to pick it up.
Right.
The other side of it, though, is the problem that they're not picking up, and all of a sudden trash starts accumulating there. They don't know whether somebody's moved in or whether they're now being charged. So that's what we'll have to work through. So we will work on that.
If they're still in front of that house, they know it's for sale, then they shouldn't even have to pick it up. That house is for sale.
Yeah. But some people have their house for sale and live there, though.
Yeah, right. Right.
So, and that's what I'm saying. The reason I was arguing on your part was because we called you a business.
Right.
When you're selling a house, that's
right.
That is not a business.
You still have the other five.
No, I agree with you on that.
And I've never complained, but on the rental, we've had that one. I've never complained about it, even though there's not been any trash there. Because I just figured it was part of the bill. But I can't eat it all six or seven, you know, I just can't do it.
Okay. Promise you we'll take a look at it.
Okay.
All right. Next is Michelle Carrico with SIDC on our PACE grant.
I just have a small update. Things haven't gotten too far with the weather, the way it's been, and all, so I'm getting it underway and getting started. The PACE board met on May the 16th, and they did have a change order and a payout number one for some upfront stuff. The change order is in regards to some soil stabilization that's needed and it was approved in the amount of $29,954. And there was also a first payout from the contractor that was approved, and it was for $50,303.45. And so tonight, for the city itself as the lead applicant, we had a grant drawdown that I would like to submit and have signed tonight, and it would be for $29,701. And so the other $20,000 is going to be a local match from PACE for that first PACE request. And so that's really all I have tonight. Not too much going on just yet over there.
So the 29 is coming from the grant money, and the 20 is coming from PACE's or PACE's funds. Okay.
I just need a signature either from Beth or the mayor.
Okay. Bring it up here. Good sign. I don't think we take any action on the council's part on that because it's not city funds.
The only thing I talked with them about is it'll go through you guys.
It's sure.
Probably has a plan to do that what you decided.
And that's when we'll do the approvals when the claim comes through, right?
Right. That's true.
Yeah. Right.
Okay.
All right.
Is that it?
Yep.
Thanks, Michelle.
Thank you.
So if they started, they're just doing the site work prep now, right?
Right now, they start work. A little bit of excavation. Every time they start to do something, it rains.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just in kind of a mess.
Okay.
Thank you.
Okay, next item on the agenda is Mr. Joe Hall from Wallach Communities on a proposed apartment complex. Introduce Mr. Hall. He's been to our Plan Commission meeting, and he's met with several of us in the city, so I'll turn it over to Joe to talk about your project.
All right, great. Thank you so much. Good to be back, folks. Looks like you guys have better refreshments at City Council than Plan Commissioners. So you got much better attendance. But no, again, thank you so much for inviting me back and getting our project on your agenda. I'll walk around, hopefully. I don't put my back to everybody. So, again, as Mr. Mayor mentioned, my name is Joe Hall. I'm with Wallach Communities. We are a Central Ohio organization. We were founded in 1966. We are a private-owned company, second-generation owners, son and daughter, along with our CEO. We are We are a full-service real estate company, so we do the development, we do the general contracting, we do the property management, we do the long-term ownership. So one thing the cities like about that is they know the person that's starting the project day one, which would be me as a developer, they then know who would be the same company, will be the person you talk to and for years to come once the property's built, stabilized, and operating. So that's a good thing. We don't build in back alleys. We buy, we build, we manage, we hold for long term. So today, just to give you a flavor of what I'm going to try to convey tonight, is again to give you a background on Walled Communities, who we are, give you an idea of how we got here, why I'm here, and then talk about some of the developments details that are in front of the council for consideration. Then last but not least, give you a timeline of where we see the development from start to finish, and then obviously take any and all questions and comments that are out there. So again, Walled Communities, Joe Hall, Vice President of Development. We are, again, a real estate company. We have almost 200 properties. And that equates to across 9 Midwest states, about 13,000 units. To break that down a little further, predominantly we're in Ohio, Kentucky, and Indiana. Of our almost 200 properties, 70% of those we own and manage. The other 30% we manage for others. Like I said, that predominantly we're in Ohio, Kentucky, and Indiana. Specifically for Indiana, we have 14 properties scattered throughout the state. We've either developed those long ago or acquired those properties within the last 5 to 10 years. More applicable to the city of Washington, we actually have 4 properties that are within an hour. It equates to about 150 units. That's in French Lick, Linton, Orleans, and Mitchell, which is really exciting for a real estate company to actually have properties already in the local vicinity. That gives us what we call scale. So when we do have a new property come up, we've got support in the area to help run it. So we're excited to be in the area already. So that's a bit of a background on our portfolio, who we are, things like that. Just wanted to tell you why are we here, how did we get here, that kind of thing, to give you a background. So about a year ago, Walled Communities went through an internal strategic review of our own organization to figure out, you know, what do we do well, what do we not do so well, where do we want to do more and better work. So from a development side, which is what I do, it came up that we already have properties in the state of Indiana, like I mentioned, have scale here. So why not try to expand our platform in the state of Indiana and do more good work? So I quickly raised my hands, quite honestly, because being in Ohio as a developer, Ohio and Indiana is very similar, so there wasn't much learning curve between the two states. And then secondly, which personally for me is very important, is I can get anywhere in the state of Indiana and back home in a day trip. So I can leave in the morning, have an afternoon meeting, and back home at night. So the wife and the kids really appreciate that. I know it's important to them, important to me. And then also, it allows me to be, it also allows me to be as local as I can be. For example, I probably average, I can be in the state 2 to 3 times a week. So if you ever need to meet with me, see me, I'm always available. Available the next day. And I think that's important as a developer to have a local feel. So that's why I raised my hand, and unfortunately enough, I was given the opportunity to expand our presence in the state of Indiana. How do we do that? Well, what we do is we expand our presence through new construction, and our funding source is the rental tax credit program through the Indiana Housing and Community Development Agency, also known as ICTA, IHCDA. The rental tax credit program is actually a federal housing program that's administered by the IRS. The IRS then says we are going to give the administrative authority to each state agency, and then it's up to each state agency to decide how they want to allocate those credits annually. And when we're talking about expanding portfolios, new construction efforts, that's done on a competitive process. So what the state of Indiana allows is they give you one opportunity a year to submit funding applications for new projects. And this round's coming up at actually the end of July. And they, though, they give you what they call a qualified allocation plan. That's basically the rules of the game. They tell you it's basically all of their housing policies baked into a rule book. And then us developers look at that rule book, we dissect it, we figure out, you know, where's our best opportunity to get a project funded. For us, we get really excited about what they call workforce housing. They have a set aside of their funding that they fund what they call workforce housing projects. Well, the question is, well, what is workforce housing? That term is used very loosely in multiple different definitions. So, but what they're saying, though, is what they see and what we see throughout the Midwest and quite honestly throughout the country is for folks that have modest incomes, they need housing near their work. And for communities, quite honestly, for them to bring in new employers, they need additional rooftops to attract those employers. So what's happening is, if the employment is there, we see folks with modest incomes driving long distance commutes. And so what's happening is any money that they're making is typically ate up in their gas tank. Rather than being able to have housing near where they work, whether it be light manufacturing, hospitality, food services, healthcare labor, rather than actually having the housing near where they work and then be able to use those incomes based on something more more productive, like we'll say nutrition and healthcare, right? So that's what we get excited about. We get that's, you know, you can feel that vision. We've actually have a similar situation in the state of Ohio. In a community called London, Ohio, which is 25 minutes west of Columbus. Their mayor gathered their local leadership. This was back in March of 2017. And he said, we've got many employers who want to come to our town. But every time we talk to an employer, they say, you don't have rooftops for my workers. So he said, how do we solve that problem? Or sorry, how do we solve that problem? So Wallach, we raised our hand and said, Mr. Mayor, we can help you with that. It's very similar to what we're trying to do here. Instead of getting our funding through IHCDA, we got our funding through HOPA, Ohio Housing Finance Agency, and we're fortunate enough to have broken ground on that opportunity here this month. So what we're trying to do is similar concept here in the state of Indiana. So when we're targeting that allocation of funds for this workforce housing, the state's actually made it pretty simple. They said that they have, at this point in time, and this rules of the game is actually for a two-year period, typically, and then they come out with new rules of the game. The one we're under now, they have six counties identified those funding sources for workforce housing, for which they see those six counties having prosperous population growth and prosperous economic current situations or future opportunities. And those six counties include Davies, Gibson, Hamilton, Hancock, Hendricks, and Warren. So that's really, we're targeting those counties, and we're fortunate enough to find the site we're talking about today on National Highway that we think fits that prototype very well. We're fortunate enough to be able to get site control. So we do have that site under contract with the seller. And right now, currently, as we started the process, I reached out to the city, got a chance to meet with Mr. Mayor and his team of folks about a month ago, sharing our vision. Then got a chance last week to come in and talk to the Planning Commission. We're really excited to get unanimous approval to move forward to City Council. And that's where we're here today. So what we are asking for is really twofold. One is, I'll run over here real quick. This site that you see here is about 5 acres. This piece here, right here, that's zoned properly. It's zoned how we want it to be. We can build what we want. However, this strip here is actually S1 right now, which basically means it's single family. And we need it to be C2, which is multifamily. So that's really the first request we're asking for. council to consider a rezone of that strip there, which is a little over 2 acres. He rezoned to match the other portion of the site that would allow us to construct what we want to construct. And the state agency requires that we have the site that we're proposing, we have that site zoned for the use that we're suggesting. So that's the first request is, you know, can we please get that piece rezoned to multifamily? Secondly is we are asking the city to consider an alternative to typical real estate taxes, which we call a pilot payment in lieu of taxes. I'll get into that a little bit more here in a moment, but typically what it is, it's an annual substitute. We still pay a fee. It's just a lesser fee based upon a calculation and as a substitute to real estate taxes. But again, I'll get into that a little bit more, why that's applicable. So that's really how we got here. Let me give you some details on the property and the project and the development we're talking about. As you can see there, the site design, we've got, we're proposing 60 units on a little less than 5 acres. That really equates to, when we're talking numbers, that equates to about $12 million in total development costs. It equates to about a $9 million construction contract, which is about 70 temporary jobs for the duration of the construction period. The cost to construct that development would be about $145,000 per unit. And then broken down one more time a little further would be about $110 per square foot. So that's really the cost, what we see to put that development in place. So you'll see that the two bigger, I'll come up here real quickly. The two bigger buildings, oh, these are the residential buildings here. 1, 2, 3. The two bigger buildings, all three buildings are three-story, proposed to be three stories.
Joe, you might want to make sure everybody up front here can see.
Yeah, sorry. Please. Okay.
You want me to hold that for you?
Yeah, that'd be awesome. Thanks. So again, the two larger buildings are all three residential buildings are proposed to be three stories. The two larger buildings are 24 units each. The third residential building is basically one of those big buildings cut in half, and it's 12 units. And then you'll see the front building here, and then you can see the elevations of the buildings there. The one on the right is the larger buildings, two of those. Middle is the smaller building, one. And then to the left is our community clubhouse, which is here to the front of the site. That would house our property manager, our maintenance professional. It would have a community room. It would have an exercise facility. And what we hope to bring is some programming onto the site for the benefit of the residents. So that's really kind of the site layout. I mentioned that we were proposing 60 units. We're proposing 60 units. The breakdown of those would be 2s and 3 bedroom units. That breakdown equates to 24 2-bedroom units and 36 3-bedroom units. The equivalent square footage for those units would be about 900 square feet for a 2-bedroom and about 1,100 square feet for a 3-bedroom. So when we're talking about getting funding from IUCDA to fund this project, but really what happens is if we were awarded funding from the state to build this development, they give us the tax credits. So again, it's competitive. We get the tax credits. We then go and sell those tax credits to what we call limited partners, which is basically big, large financial institutions, big banks. They take those credits, and they use that to offset their federal tax liability. In exchange for that, they give us equity to build the property. That typically equates to about 70% of the sources needed to build the development. Then usually the other 30% are a traditional construction loan, permanent lending, type situation, perm loan, and that's usually where we see our sources. But when the state agency gives us those funds, they require us to make long-term promises, and those long-term promises are recorded as a land use restriction agreement against the deed. So it is a promise that's recorded, and really it's a couple to break it down in very simple terms. So they give us the funding, and in exchange for that, they require that we promise an affordability at the property for 30 years. So what you see day one is what you'll see for the next 30 years. Secondly, is they say also, we are going to only allow you to rent to folks of certain income. And in this property, in this sense, we would say on the low end of a two-bedroom, we can rent to households that make up to $17,000 annually, all the way up to the high end of a three-bedroom, to where households can make up to $55,000 annually. Then the last thing that they say is they say, we're also going to limit how much you can charge these residents at this development. They say that, so to give an equivalence of that, when we talked about the low end of a two-bedroom, we're allowed to charge about $250. And about the middle of that scale, we're allowed to charge about $500 to $600. And then the other half of the units, we're able to charge anywhere between $850 and $975 per unit. And that's actually and in that scenario, those units, those residents are cutting a check for their rent every month, just like any other resident would for their market rate rents, or you know, anyone like anyone else is paying their mortgage on a monthly basis. So that's really where you have that. So what we would do then is, so we have the rents, and then, but what's really good about for the city, quite honestly, the program's really cool in this regard. So they're saying again, we've got the lower end, you're going to have 25% of your units to be on that lower end, what we talked about. And then another 25 is going to be about in the middle. But then the last 50% of the units that are on the higher end, which I talked about, rents at $800, $975, that puts us into the world of competing with market rate units to get these units leased up and occupied, which is great because that means we need to build a market rate type property to attract those type of residents to get those type of rents. And what's really cool about that is every unit has to be the same. So it's not like we can say, well, these will be nice units and these will be not so nice. Every unit's got to be the same. You can't tell the difference. So I think that's really good for the city's intention. When you're having a community asset like this, bringing an affordable product to the community, which I believe this meets your comprehensive needs. Your comprehensive plan says that you folks want housing with a wide range of incomes and age, which this does. So this is a really good opportunity because this allows us to bring an asset to the community at a market rate type of design that will show well. And then another really good thing for the city, and it's not a bad thing for us, but we've got a lot of folks that are overseeing what we're doing, especially so for us to get these credits, our corporate entity has to provide quite a few financial guarantees. We have to financially guarantee that we're going to build the property that we say we're going to build it. We have to financially guarantee that we're going to build it and the timeline we say we're going to build it. We have to financially guarantee that we are going to build the building as we said we would build the building. And then for what they call this tax credit period that we're promising to the agency is we guarantee those credits that if we mess up, we pay the money back to the state agency to the extent we messed up and we didn't do it how we said we do. So we've got a lot of financial guarantees against this property that basically said we're not going to mess up. And then in addition to that, we've got the state agency coming to this property almost on an annual basis looking at it, making sure we're doing what we promised. We've got these lenders that have given us millions of dollars to build this facility, and equity providers, they're coming to the building to see, making sure we're doing. So we got a lot of oversight, and we got a lot of financial risk at stake. So basically, that should be a very good feeling for the city that we're going to do what we say we're going to do, because we can't afford not to. And then last but not least, what we do from an affordable perspective, when we're trying to get funding from these state agencies, whether it's Indiana, Ohio, Kentucky, if we were to mess up one of these properties and not deliver as we promised, we're never going to get a funding award again. So reputationally, we can't afford to miss. And then the last thing I'll share about that is they even hold our feet to the fire in other states. So So say, for example, we're up in Michigan trying to do a similar type of development as this. On their application page, they're going to say, hey, is any other state pissed off at you? And we would have to say, if they were, we'd have to say, yes, Indiana's not so happy. Then we can't get funding in Michigan either. So it's nice how they cross-reference that. And it just holds us to make sure that we're delivering what we promise. And our reputation, just we do that anyhow. Just wanted to articulate, though, there's a lot of backstops there that the city can feel good about, that we're going to build what we promise to build. So what I did mention, though, is we are asking for the city to consider financial incentives for this development in the form of a pilot, payment in lieu of taxes. The reason that we do that, and that we really cannot afford to pay typical market rate real estate taxes like other properties, as I mentioned, half of our units, like I talked about, in the low and the middle range, we're not able to charge what market rate folks are able to charge to make the property sustainable, even though our property is going to cost just as much as theirs to build. So that in itself just basically states that we cannot afford to pay as much real estate taxes as others. So that's really why the incentive's there and why we're requesting it. And I'll get into the terms that we're asking. But what we also do, for a 60-unit property, typically it's difficult to put a property manager and a maintenance professional on site for 5 days a week full time, just because there's not quite the scale there to do so. But if we're able to receive the financial incentive, because right now currently we'd be at 3 to 4 days a week probably, Monday through Wednesday, Monday through Thursday, Monday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, whatnot. But if we're able to receive financial incentive support from the city, we would take that savings and actually then put a property manager and a maintenance professional on site 5 days a week during normal business hours. And that's really, quite honestly, it makes a big difference on keeping a property sustainable and a strong community asset. Because when you have those professionals on site, one, that gives the residents a very comforting feel that they know who they can go to and when they can go to their problems to be addressed. And secondly, when those professionals are on site that much, they really know their tenant base. And they can troubleshoot any issues that would pop up, and they really are able to run a tight ship in that manner. So that's, from a social perspective, that's what we'd really like to see happen if we're given the financial incentives through a pilot. The terms of the pilot that we're asking for is for a 16-year period. The reason the 16-year period is because these investors are typically investing in this facility for 15 years at the minimum. And so for a consistency for their underwriting and to know what they're investing in, they request that these tax incentives be for a 16-year period so they know what they're getting when they invest in it. And so how the calculation goes is we would say it's collected rents less owner paid utilities. That net number, we're proposing to times that by a 4% rate. And then that number would be what we would pay on an annual basis as a substitute to real estate taxes. This property here, as we see it, would then be paying annually about $16,000 as a substitute to real estate taxes. And that number typically doesn't change much over the 16-year period of time as you look at the modeling of investments. So that's the financial incentive request that we have out there. So that's a bit of a background on our development from a detailed perspective. And let me go ahead and transition to the timeline of the property, and then obviously any questions, answers, comments will take all to come. So what we're trying to do is we're trying to get, we need to rezone, and the financial incentives to be determined by the time we put in our funding application on July 29th of this year to the state agency for consideration. Hopefully we get funded, and if we get funded, that award announcement is made middle of November this year. So assuming we get an award, we would then take probably the next 9 to 10 months to get our financing lined up and get all of our approvals and permits approved through the city. So we would then break ground on this property, which would be probably fall of 2020. From there, we're proposing about a 12-month construction period. So we would expect to have the first building done probably late spring 2021, the second one about middle of 2021. And once one building is built, we'll start to lease that up. And then hopefully we'll have the entire project completed fall of 2021. And then certainly we will hopefully have a fully occupied and stable building as early as spring of 2022. So again, it's hopefully I've shared a vision of background in Wallach, why we're here, some details of the property, and then the timeline that we foresee. And again, we're asking for a rezone from S1 to C2, and for the city to consider a financial incentive in the form of a pilot. And from there, all questions and comments, glad to take them.
In your applications to the state and whatever restrictions, is there a restriction that you cannot sell this property?
So we cannot sell the property for a 15-year period. So we have to hold it for a 15-year period. And then we then also, we commit to another 15-year period for affordability purposes. So right, so to basically get, to deliver all the incentives we promised, it certainly is held for at least 15 years.
So for 1 year, we could be dealing with a different company on the pilot. Because you said you're doing that for 16, you want that for 16 years.
Right. So what we do typically, here's how this would play out for how we do business. We would get the investor out after year 15. We would own it 100%. We would own it then. And then we would work to basically bring a renovation back to the property by at least year 20, because these are set up to be sustainable for at least 20 years. And we would take it back through the credit program, but in a non-competitive credit, they call this 4% credits, and we basically renovate it with a substantial renovation and basically bring in new limited partners, but we would continue to be the owners. So we're long-term owners, though.
Would we have any control over who you could sell it to?
I don't think so. I mean, but what you do have the control over would always be affordable, because that's going to run along with the deed restriction. That will be recorded on the land use restriction agreement.
Your funding was a mixture of investors getting tax credits and regular loans?
So our capital stack as we see it right now would be 9% credits. That would be the equity from the limited partner, and that would make up about 70% of the sources. And then the majority of the remaining sources would be a construction loan and be converted to a permanent through, so it would be a first mortgage. And then we're also going to get a second loan. We're applying for a second loan through Indiana Housing Community Development Agency, ICDA, which would also be, is basically must pay as a second loan. And then we would probably have some deferrals of fees.
And those loans are about 30%?
Yeah, it'll be a little less than that. So again, 70% of fee credits, we'll say the combination of the two would be about 30%.
You mentioned both $12 million and $9 million numbers.
Yeah, so the $12 million.
Any difference again?
Sure, that's a great question. The $12 million is total development cost. That's basically all the costs associated with the development. That would include the acquisition of the land, the construction of the facility, the third-party professionals that we have to secure to be able to build the development. It would be the bank's loan fees. It'd be the construction period interest. And then last but not least is we put in operating reserves to make sure that we have the investors make us have a rainy day reserve fund. It's typically not touched, but we have to have it. So we have some reserves, and then last but not least, we would be putting some funding away for the lease-up to make sure we have the funds to lease up the facility. Compared to that, then the $9 million I referenced is just simply the construction contract with the general contractor to build the facility.
But that's $21 million in total?
No.
Or that the $9 million is in the 12?
Exactly, that's okay. Correct. So again, the $9 million is in the 12. So it's predominantly made up of the construction contract, but those other items get you to the $12 million.
Okay. Did I understand you to say, though, that once you set the rates on the apartments, they cannot go up for 30 years? Is that what you said?
So Close. It's a little tricky. But there are income limits that are established by the federal government that we have to follow. And it tells us how much, and they're called set-asides, so area median income. So we would be setting ourselves up with, and the state agency really dictates this to us if we want to get an award. So we would have 25% of our units will be at this 30% set-aside, so folks that make 30% of area median income. The next 25 would be folks that make 50% of area median income. And then the last 50% would be folks that make 80% of area median income. So those income levels, we can never charge rent above those rents calculated off those income levels.
But you can also never put more apartments on the higher end once you settle?
We can charge rent. No, we would increase rents on an annual basis just to keep
No, I understand that, but I'm saying if you designate 12 of them for the 30% and 12 more for the 50, can you go back and say now there's only 6 for the 30 and 8?
No, that's the beautiful thing, and that's what allows the city to know what they're getting, because that's that land use restriction agreement that I referenced. That's on that. That's recorded. So we are held to those set-asides.
For 30 years?
For 30 years. I do want to mention this, though. Again, the IHCDA application process to get funding is at the end of the day, a bit of a beauty contest. And one of the things they say to make your property more attractive to them to fund is they would like to see 20% of your development having project-based vouchers through a housing authority. So I've been talking to the Knox County Housing Authority about potentially putting the rental vouchers directly assigned to our property, whether that be 6 or 12. I don't know if we're going to get there or not. They've been thinking about it, talking to HUD. But that's one of the things that we really need to do to increase our chances of getting funded. So that would leave it at either 48 units are basically income restricted and residents are cutting their checks, and then maybe then 12 units would be have project-based vouchers associated with them through the housing authority, where the resident pays up to 30% of their income, and then the rest of the rent that's due would be paid by the housing authority. So I'm talking with them. I don't know if we'll get there or not. If we don't, then it's just 60 units that are income restricted and everybody pays their own rent.
But so the government does not subsidize any of that, of what's left over on the rent?
On the 12 units, the project-based ones?
Any of them.
So the government subsidizes nothing on income restricted.
I understand the vouchers they would.
They would on the vouchers. No, they don't. Because what do you see this? This is more a construction subsidy. So they give us the money to fund the construction. In exchange, we just promise to only rent to a certain range of folks and only charge them so much. Otherwise, yeah, there's no rental subsidy other than maybe those project vouchers that we might be able to get from Knox County.
Okay. And then on this pilot, do you ever set a minimum, or it's always a percentage?
No, we can work on that. There is typically sometimes, if it's more attractive for the city to do a minimum, we can do minimums.
Well, I mean, it could always raise, mm-hmm. you know, as far as percentage, but.
Correct. Yeah, there's a floor. There could be a floor. That's been done before.
So in these other cities around here on the pilot, they've done those?
No idea. I don't know. I honestly don't know what other cities have done.
I mean, with your developments, like French Lick and?
Those, I don't know. I'm not sure what's on this, quite honestly.
I'd like to know more about the mechanism of pilot. I mean, are we also then saying that the county's not going to get property tax off of it?
That's correct. No other taxing units. That'd be the total. All taxing units would share
in whatever that
I
is.
Guess would share in that.
Would they then require their approval?
Huh?
Would that then require their approval?
I don't know. Hmm? I'll need to find that out. I don't know that answer. So you haven't done any as a developer in Indiana with this pilot?
Not in Indiana.
I'm playing devil's advocate. Let's say we say no with the pilot program. Is that a stopper for you?
We'd have to see what the city says as market rate real estate taxes. I'm guessing we probably couldn't afford it. Yeah.
Did you get that yet?
No, I did not.
are you able to do a tax abatement program rather than pilot?
We are.
Depending on
typically, though, we find cities are more, find pilots more attractive because they are getting something on an annual basis. And it's very predictable. You know what you're going to get for the most part because it's a calc. The cap doesn't change much. But if an abatement is works better for the city, we're certainly open to abatement as well.
Mayor, in the interest of moving things along, I move we read ordinance 11-2019 as far as the rezoning.
Oh, okay. Sure.
Second that.
Okay. Hang on a minute. We'll get that file back together. Okay.
This would be just first reading.
Yes, that's correct. Okay, I have a motion by Councilman Chambers, and I think Councilman Dahl seconded it to read ordinance 11-2019. All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried. Ordinance number 11-2019, and ordinance to rezone certain real estate on the east side of Washington near East National Highway, Business 50. Whereas Jared Miller and JAWG Investments LLC own land located west of 100 East, south of East National Highway between Cherry Tree Plaza and Clements Drive. And whereas Wallach Communities have petitioned the City Plan Commission to rezone approximately 2.25 acres of land at this location from suburban residential to commercial 2. And whereas the Washington City Plan Commission has recommended the rezoning of the land in question from S1 to C2. And whereas the legal description of the land in question is identified in the attached Exhibit 1. And whereas the Common Council of the City of Washington, Indiana finds that the parcels in question would be more appropriately used as commercial 2, be it ordained by the Common Council of the City of Washington, Indiana as follows. Section 1, that the approximately 2.25 acres identified in the attached Exhibit 1 shall be rezoned as commercial 2. Section 2, that the Washington Code of Ordinances is hereby amended in conformity with the terms of this ordinance. Section 3, this ordinance shall be in full force and effect from and after its passage by the Common Council of the City of Washington and the approval of the Mayor of the City of Washington, passed by the Common Council of the City of Washington, Davis County, Indiana, this blank day of blank 2019. And I do not have that exhibit with that legal description, but was that in your package?
Plan Commission unanimously.
Yes.
Everybody was in favor. It was not a problem with the Plan Commission.
So the same person owns all of the property already?
Yes, that's correct. Yeah, he owns all of it all the way up to the highway there.
And most of it is already C2, except the strip he pointed out earlier.
2.25 acres.
And he has applied for this rezoning, so he's in agreement with it.
Yes.
Okay, the way this will work is we will have, at our next meeting, we will have a public hearing prior to the meeting about the rezoning, and then we will read that ordinance for a second time and vote on it. And in the meantime, this council will be getting together to discuss the incentives. So.
Okay.
I have one more question for you. As far as infrastructure or anything like that, the city is not obligating anything?
No, sir. So we use American Structure Point out of Indianapolis to do professional engineering on the site, and that would all be on us as a developer to incur those costs.
Are there two exits, two entrances?
Yeah, so you'll see, we really kind of want to work with the city on this one because we know the National Highway is getting ready to be, I think, changed, and Mr. Mayor mentioned that to us. So I know what was important to the folks we've talked to thus far is there would be this exit that would then go to the light to kind of eliminate the confusion here.
Right.
So if the city would prefer just one, then okay. Or if the city would still like to see two, we're open to whatever the city wants to see there.
We talked about a right in, right out there on the highway, up on the north of the west end there.
Yeah.
But the main entrance beyond that cul-de-sac.
Kind of like a Casey's.
Yes, it would come out between Casey's and the teacher's credit.
Well, I mean like Casey's right in, right out only.
Yes.
Right.
Where, just curious, where's our water and sewer at on that site or near that site now?
Water is, there's a 10-inch line down the highway, and also there's an 8-inch line over behind JC, so there's plenty of access. A 6-inch line coming down the cul-de-sac there by Casey's.
Okay.
So we can loop it in all different directions.
And Scott is not here due to bandwidth issues, and I have not a clue.
But the sewer we're redoing?
The sewer is all
redoing that anyway?
What's that?
The sewer we're going to redo anyway.
On the highway.
Under the highway, yeah.
Right, yeah. So,
yeah. But the sewer's all at the highway, right?
North side.
North side of the highway?
Yeah.
Okay. So we're good there. Okay. Right, well, any other questions for Mr. Hall? Okay.
Thanks, everybody. Appreciate
yeah.
your time and consideration.
Yes, thank you for considering our city. Okay, let's see. Moving right along on the agenda then, we have no resolutions tonight. We do have one other ordinance. 12, let's see here. Could I have a motion to read Ordinance 12-2019?
Second.
Motion by Councilman Sidebottom and a second by Councilman Singleton. All in favor, please say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried. Ordinance number 12-2019. An ordinance for additional appropriation from Community Crossings Matching Grant CCMG Fund. Whereas it has been determined that it is now necessary to appropriate more money than was originally appropriated in the annual budget, now therefore, Section 1. Be it ordained by the Common Council of the City of Washington, Indiana, Davis County, that for the expense of the taxing unit, the following additional sums of money are hereby appropriated out of the funds named and for the purposes specified, subject to laws governing the same. Fund 243, Community Crossings Matching Grant. Under the major budget classification of repair and maintenance, amount requested $100,000, amount approved by fiscal body $100,000. Again, repair and maintenance, amount requested $27,924, amount approved by fiscal body $27,924. Repair and maintenance $85,950, requested and amount approved $85,950. And again, repair and maintenance amount requested $205,426.40, amount approved by fiscal body $205,426.40, total for Fund 243, $419,300.40, amount approved by fiscal body, same, $419,300.40, passed and adopted by the Common Council of the City of Washington, Davis County, Indiana, this blank day of blank 2019. You want to go through each of those and explain what those are, please, Beth?
The Community Crossings grant that we received, we already have received the grant portion, the $205,426 came in last week. So our portion of the match, $100,000, we already had that in the Community Crossings fund that was left over from CSX paid us $100,000 for their portion of the bridge, so we have that money in there already. The other, the $27,924 came from MVH number 201, and the $85,950 came from MVH number 203. We're required to put 50% of the money that we receive a gas tax in MVH 203. So we take that money out first, and then the difference is comes out of the regular MVH account. So this is a lot of money that we're going to use for the Community Crossings project, and we're just asking to get it appropriated. We have to have permission to spend it.
And again, we have all that money in the account. We just need to appropriate it to spend it.
Yes.
So that ordinance will be up for reading and adoption next.
And public hearing.
And public hearing next month. Or next meeting, I'm sorry. Okay. And we hope to, about that same time, get started on the actual paving work. We hope. Let's see.
other business. Have a request, someone wants to speak about the Share the Roads program. You're next on the agenda.
I'm Heather Elliott. Beth cannot be here today, so asked me to come along. I'm also a representative for DC Actives here in town, and I'm asking for a request for signage. We have $1,000 that we're willing to spend on signs. They're the same as the ones you may have seen out in the county. The little bright bicycle on there says Share the Road. The cost of the sign and installation is approximately $250 each. We have $1,000. Our hope is that we can purchase 4 of the signs to be placed. All the signage information can be obtained through the county engineer who partnered with us to get the county signage project completed, as well as the street department. Our priority city spots would be near the library. I believe it's Cosby Road that runs there across between Washington on out to Blue. The park exit intersection, which would be Bedford Road, and near the sports complex, Linda Dunn area. We think those would be some good priority locations for these signs. May is Bike Awareness a month, and we're hoping to achieve our goal by increasing cycling safety within our city limits for the community and the visitors that ride into town. The money that we have was raised with our annual Hoosier Classic Ride with the support of the David Community Hospital Foundation. And this year we're hosting another ride. It'll be on September 22nd with our same mission to raise funds to pay for cycling safety projects. Question for signage, please.
And those signs are the, about that. They say Share the Road. I think they have a caricature of a bicycle right here on it, right?
It says Share the Road.
Okay. I'm not sure how we, do we approve that at the council by motion, or how do we do that? Or are you under us in, or questions do you have for Heather? Yeah, that's what I'm thinking. And you're not asking necessarily for any markings on the road or bike lanes or anything like that, just to Share the Road to raise awareness of bike riders? What questions anybody have on that?
I'm on board. I can tell you that. I mean, whatever the Board of Works decides, but I think it's a good idea.
Jerry, you got any thoughts?
No, I think it's a good idea.
How long are we good with it? Okay. Yeah, Brian.
The size of the signs you're proposing?
It's like a standard triangle street sign with a bright.
I think they're the standard
24-inch triangle.
A pretty good size. I know that. I think they're.
I'm sorry. What did you say?
Yeah, I wanted to make sure that wherever we put them, they're not a.
They gotta be a certain height above the ground, so far off the road.
And we just have to locate where they go.
Sure.
Yeah.
Okay. How have they been received out in the county? How many do you have out in the county, by the way? Do you know?
Several. We have they're on Dawson Road, they're on Sportsman's Road, they're out on Troy Road, Edwardsport Road. That's a good question I'd have to ask.
I think you got one going out Bedford Road, don't you?
Yes, you do, right there by.
Right as you leave the city limits there.
Yeah. Yep, there is.
I've seen that one a lot. Yeah.
And as a cyclist myself, I was out Saturday, and I think people are noticing them. I know that people
good.
Seem to be veering over more and slowing down for us out there. So
good.
I think it is actually helping.
Okay. Well, we typically decide on road issues and sign issues and so forth at the Board of Public Works.
Okay.
So we will take that up at that meeting after this meeting, okay? Okay, next item on the agenda is a tax abatement phase-in request from Kevin Bush with Indiana Safety. I think I see you back there, Kevin. Yeah, I don't think the rest of them have that.
You're making good progress.
Yes, come right along.
Just tell us about the project and what you're looking at, Kevin.
Yeah, we're adding 11,800 square foot of warehouse space and roughly about 2,500 square foot of office space, and then about 1,700 square feet of garage space. Indiana Safety's in the old P.A. Kennedy locker, and they sell mainly business to business. We're an industrial safety equipment distribution company. We actually supply products in all 50 states, Canada, Mexico, Puerto Rico. Most people in town don't know us because we don't sell retail. They're walking off the street and purchase products. We're selling safety-related products to factories to protect their workers so they don't get injured. And 7 or 8 years ago, I built some buildings at the Crane Tech Park, and the city council took a gamble on me with some tax abatement when we only had 8 jobs, and it's turned out pretty well. We have over 80 jobs there, so we're creating some new jobs here in Washington with my safety business. Why not try that again? We've hired 6 new people, essentially out of space, and we expect to hire at least 6 more probably by the end of the year, and hopefully more again in 2020. President Trump's tax reduction helped us small business owners immensely, and things like property tax abatement does as well, so that frees up those dollars for us to invest in our business and train new employees, and kind of makes our world go round.
And I know I saw these numbers on the original. They're a little hard to read on these copies here, but the number of people you currently have and what you're projecting.
We have 30 today. Actually trying to hire 3 to 5 now, so you can find the right quality people. We'll have certainly 36 by the end of the year, an additional 6. And then if the economy stays strong, I can foresee another 3 to 12 next year, and we'll have enough space. We have enough space with this building to accommodate about 20. Don't know if we'll get there or not, but we're going to try.
And have you firmed up what you're spending?
I have. I've scaled back a little bit. Right at $1 million. Reality set in.
What I did put in your packets. I took the liberty to take a stab at a couple of different assessed values because you don't know. Until the building's complete, it's hard to get the county assessor to say, okay, this is what it's going to be assessed at. But I did ask Mr. Eaton to go out and take a look at Kevin's property, and I think he was out there toward the end of last week. And he felt for what's being done, 700 would be a good assessed value, someplace between 700 to 950. So I put in what you haven't seen this, Kevin, but what I put in your packets in is what that, if it's page 3, is if it assesses at 700,000, here would be the property taxes with or without the abatement phase in. So I think you've seen that scale. I think we've looked at that schedule before. So so it would start what. What I proposed was starting out with 100% abatement and then decreasing 10% for each of the next 10 years. And that's pretty much, I think, what we were.
Sounds really good.
That's pretty much a standard that we do on buildings in the city and I think in the county. I don't know what the county did on yours up there, but that's pretty standard. So, what questions do you all have for Kevin? I was up, looked at the building, and went through it with Kevin last week once, and I know some of you have driven by. It's coming right along, so.
It is. Close to completion with the actual construction of the building by the end of next week. So I have a little bit left to do in the internal offices, and then we're putting in all the parking as well.
Are you coming further out in that grass?
Yes, almost about 20.
I was going to say, because you lost a lot of your parking.
I mean, way out. Yeah, dramatic amount of concrete. So that'll be another 4 or 5 weeks to get the rain to stop.
Good for that.
Hey, Kevin also does supply some safety equipment, gloves and so forth to the city, I believe, some of the various departments.
Most of the departments with their safety equipment for the most part.
Explain again your employee situation. It looks like you said you hired 5, need 4 to 6 more.
We've actually hired 6 total now since I filled that out.
Okay, and their average salary is $42,000.
Well, none of the new hires. I took that question to ask what the average salary was company-wide currently.
I'd say 28,000 on the other side, doesn't it?
Right, clearly. Okay. And what will they be doing?
There will be at least one delivery driver, at least one warehouse clerk, 2 or 3 more regional sales managers, which will be either traveling or inside salespeople, and then another customer service clerk. Sort of a secretarial position. Mm-hmm. I'd fill all of them today if I could find the right quality. We always struggle with
that. Most of your employees live in Davis County, I would imagine.
Yes, all but we have 2 live in Kentucky and 2 in northern Indiana. The rest we live in Davis County, 26,000.
I'll make a motion to be approved.
Second. I had mentioned that one condition. You want to put that on it as far as appealing
the one that...
Yeah. What you call that, a clawback?
Clawback.
Yes.
Prohibition on appealing assessed values.
Can you explain that one more time there?
What a lot of communities are doing when they offer this is some type of, the most common one is that the owner can't question the assessed value of their property while the abatement is in place, so that he gets the assessed value at $700,000. 3 years down the road, he appeals to the county to say, I want my assessed value lowered. Well, that impacts... Well, it impacts what he says. It also impacts the income to the city from the property taxes that we do collect. And so what's done a lot of times is we would say, okay, we'll agree to the abatement, but you agree that for the period of the abatement and the year after, you agree not to appeal that assessed value to the county.
Sure. And that works well as long as the assessed value is increased too quickly as the abatement.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. You're taking that risk, and so are we. So that's kind of a shared risk.
You
so.
Give a little more guarantee than I do, but I have to take what I
do. Well, I would amend my motion accordingly to include that caveat then, Mayor.
For the 11 years, for the next 11 years.
For the period of time that he agrees not to appeal any assessment of assessed value.
Okay. Have that motion then by Councilman Chambers and a second by Councilman Brown. All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried. Okay, we'll get the paperwork on this started and get it over to the county, because that's where it has to go then for enactment or for your tax purposes. So
thank you.
Good luck with your rest of your construction and your continued business, Kevin. Thank you. I think there is something you need to sign. She's got the originals for you. Okay. I've lost my agenda and all this pile of stuff here. Okay. I believe that's all on the council agenda. A few announcements here. As you know, we solicited quotes for the employee health insurance for this coming 19 to 20 year, and we have an employee benefits committee made up of David and Blake and Mike, Kathy, Beth, and myself. We received responses from 4 agencies, with 3 giving us quotes. The committee looked at all those, hashed them around, talked about them.
came to the decision that the price differences among them were not significant enough to make a change. We are looking at, particularly considering the, what was the word we used, disruption that it would cause to the employees.
Like in the middle of the year, like especially.
Yeah. So we're going to continue with the current agency, Thompson Insurance. The good point is our stop loss coverage is only going to go up 5 to 6%. On a total dollar standpoint, it's minimal, really. And so we are, the recommendation of the committee is that we not increase the premiums to the employees. And we, there's going to be a few small tweaks to the coverages and so forth, but not anything significant, just more on, stop loss. Yeah, more on the city side than the employee side. So, I think that's pretty much what we, I mean, we've had, what, two or three meetings on it. These guys have earned their pay the last few weeks.
We're just waiting on one more last, what they call a disruption report.
Right.
To see, you know, to make a final decision. But like the mayor said, the dollars just didn't justify throwing the whole employee system into turmoil at this time of year. We'll look at it again next year.
Yeah. So, so the good news is, I think that was all good news. We've built up the fund a lot this past year, too, so that's been real helpful to us. Just a few other things coming up. Fundraiser meal and silent auction, if you haven't seen, for to benefit former Councilman Joe Fleck, help pay his medical bills. That's coming up Saturday, if anybody's interested, from noon to 4 at the VFW. On June the 6th at 9 a.m. right here, we have 5 enforcement hearings on abandoned and dilapidated properties. That will result in those, we'll either get definitive plans and timelines from the owners to bring them up to speed, or proceed toward condemnation. The annual youth fishing tournament that we have that the Parks Department puts on is on the 8th, Saturday the 8th, from 8 to 10. I don't know if Kip, you have anything to say about that, but that's always been a pretty popular.
Back this year. I don't know if we did it with the back to school bash, but it's so hot, fishing's not real well in August. So we decided to take it back to where we originally did it, was right after school let out. So we can get our numbers up a little more.
Okay. The employee health fair is at Eastside Park on June the 13th. And we got word that E&B Paving is going to start on their first round of paving the week of June the 10th. Is that, that's in my memory, right? Yeah. So we're basically giving them, looking at the list of streets now, and we'll get that to you when we get that finalized with E&B. So that's all that I believe I have. Mike, do you have anything for the good of the order? Doug?
We've got two quick questions.
Okay.
Number one, I'm not real sure about this executive meeting. Starts at 4 and ends at 7?
No. Starts at 4, about an hour, hour and a half.
Well, I just wasn't, because I got like 5 emails.
Yeah, I know. We have slow yet. Debbie and I both had computer problems today, okay. And we got those fixed.
So 4 o'clock.
4 o'clock on next Monday.
Okay. Yeah. And then, is there any way you can find out the tax assessment on this project?
That's what we're trying to find out before that.
Even means. A ballpark
figure. Yeah.
And then also find out how we split that, how we share that with county.
Yeah, that was a good question.
Kevin, the pilot. Or the pilot. Yeah.
The pilot. Yes.
Yeah, because I was asking him about selling it, I was going to ask him, well, what would you sell it for? You know?
But anyway.
And there's your assessed value.
Right.
And it'd be a lot more than $16,000.
Well, I know it's going to be. Yeah. I understand that. But
that's a good point.
But I would like to.
I would too.
Like to know how to share that.
Yes.
Yeah.
Good point. Well, we know what we're talking about, but just the difference. It's going to be substantial.
Yeah, how big it is. And that's all I have.
Yeah, and I've asked Brian Niehoff to help us get the heat. He's going to hopefully have that for us for our meeting Monday, what that assessed value could be. It's really hard to get those assessed values before the project's done.
I
know, and that's what I did on Kevin's thing. I just told Denny, I said, give me a number. I mean, I'm not going to hold you to it, just give me some ballpark number, so that's what I did. So.
Because that way we could actually look at the, if he was going to go with the abatement, we could actually compare.
Do some numbers, yes. Yes, good point. Alan?
I'm good. I'm still a little troubled with this business with Mr. and Mrs. Lyford, and I want to wait to hear from Kim, and while Anita's here, I want to hear from her.
You don't like money.
Well, I know, but we want, it's part of the process, if you don't mind, or you can email it to me.
Stacy's been studying it. She's got a great explanation. She can send it to me. I'll send it out to you guys tomorrow.
All right, very good. Thank you.
Good, okay.
I don't have anything.
Jerry? Beth, do you have anything else?
No, sir.
Okay. Anything else from the department heads that I've missed or forgot? Okay. Could I have a motion to adjourn the council meeting?
So moved.
Thanks. Motion by Councilman Sidebottom, a second by Councilman Chambers. All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Meeting adjourned. Board of Public Works will be in about 5 or 10 minutes.
I see your head. I see your head above there.